Snapchat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in with us, and I'm really happy to be back on this Wednesday, June 8th. Awesome show in store for you. So many political things going on today and yesterday. And as we all know, the presidential primaries are starting to come to a close. And you know, we've been commenting on this crazy race, one of the most extreme and unpredictable in some ways in my memory for sure. And you know, I'm almost 30, so I guess it hasn't been that long, but I've heard from plenty of people that are much older than I am that have also said the same thing. You know, people haven't seen something this crazy in the electoral politics in a long time. So we're in for an interesting ride, to say the least. And I know a lot of people are, you know, have a lot to say about what went on Monday with the AP. We talked about that last show, and then yesterday, with the pretty much the final big primaries that went on yesterday. And so we're going to be covering all of that. Make sure you catch us Monday through Friday here on UCY.TV and on the antimedia.org/radio. I'm here Monday and Wednesday with my panel, and then SM Gibson Tuesdays and Thursdays, LeVon on Fridays. Bunch of different opinions on things and varying points of view, special guests. I was working on getting a member of Anonymous on the show tonight who was actually involved in some huge recent attacks, including on the London Stock Exchange, mainstream media, some stuff like that. I'm still working on that. They were not able to join us tonight just because of short notice, because they just started reaching out to me today. But we're going to be working on that. Maybe on Monday we'll have that going. And we're going to be working on trying to get some of these like alternate political parties on the show. I actually have met and I know Jill Stein, so we're going to try to get her on. And we're going to be working on getting Gary Johnson on the show, which, you know, hard to say if that'll actually pan out. I think the Jill Stein thing is more likely. But we're working on it, so just be patient with us. Anyway, if you want to call in and sound off or join the conversation tonight, the number is 718-717-8296. We got somewhat of an unscripted show tonight. We're going to be talking because there's just so much political stuff. We're going to be going on and on about that stuff tonight. So you know, if you want to join the conversation, feel free. I am joined tonight by our amazing journalist and editor, Claire Vernish. What's up, Claire?
Not much. What's up?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Really just stupefied by this AP thing on Monday, and I know we talked about it on Monday night, but it's, you know, ongoing, and we saw its effects yesterday on the votes, and, you know, Hillary Clinton won California in a landslide, and that's not something that was expected, and I don't want to make assumptions based on anecdotal evidence or anything like that, but let's just say that I haven't met a Hillary Clinton supporter in real life here in California outside of my grandma. So, like, literally, I mean, this AP thing had a huge role to play in voter turnout for Bernie Sanders. And basically, those not familiar with what went on, the AP basically called it on Monday night, right before these big, huge primaries on Tuesday. And they said, hey, you know, Hillary Clinton basically won, so there's no point in insinuating, like, well, it's already wrapped up, so there's no point in getting out there and casting your vote. Claire, you actually covered this pretty in-depth with the anti-media, and I also saw, I don't know if you wrote that one on the Free Thought Project, but it was covered over there as well, where you also work. What do you think about this AP thing? I mean, the AP to me is the single largest media influencer, and, you know, those that aren't familiar with the AP, you know, that they're basically the most powerful newswire service in the United States and arguably in the world, at least in the Western world. The AP establishes the news cycle. They establish the media narrative. Whatever they say gets regurgitated by every single major news outlet in the country. And all of the big six, you know, all the news companies that are owned by the big six corporations, they regurgitate everything that is said by the AP. And many people like to say, oh, Fox is crappy or MSNBC is crappy. And they're not wrong, but the AP is truly the kind of quiet hand that's behind the scene. Claire, I mean, what do you make of this decision of the AP on Monday to basically crown Hillary Clinton the king?
Well, I don't know if you – I did write – there were two articles on Free Thought. And the one that I wrote today actually shows a little bit more evidence that the AP was actually colluding with Clinton and her campaign to make sure that announcement went out right before the California primary. So this was a planned, staged event that they pulled off. And it seems to have been incredibly effective because, you know, any slanted polls or any slanted information or anything right before a primary, it's always planned because they're trying to get people to either stay away from the polls or to go to the polls for one person. So, I mean, this worked perfectly in their light.
Yeah, I mean, it's what was it? Who was it? Was it Chris Matthews? Here we go. I'm pulling it up now. Sorry, I didn't have this clip prepared, but I'm gonna try to get it off. Chris Matthews basically kind of leaked this information. Like this was brewing for a long time, and many people wonder about you know, media coordination, politically speaking, and whether the mainstream media and stuff work in concert together. Chris Matthews kind of spilled the beans on this, and I don't know if it was on accident or if he did it on purpose, but this clip right here is over a week old. Now, keep in mind, this announcement came on Monday night. This is Chris Matthews basically talking about it back on, I think it was on the 31st of May, 30th or 31st of May, and let's see if I can get this clip to play. I mean, what kind of, like, just I mean, I know it was disguised as a question there, but on one hand, I feel like Chris Matthews was like trying to, maybe deep down in his heart somewhere, he's like, shit, you know what? Like, I need to let the public know about this. Or maybe, you know, they were just planning on saying that anyway. But to me, this really, and like I said, this happened a week before the announcement came. This is really evidence of media coordination. And so, like, all of these media outlets had already received their, they had already received their marching orders. You know, they had already been told, like, hey, look, you guys are going to announce that Hillary Clinton is going to win. It's going to happen on Tuesday. And, you know, we're going to do it. And this guy is saying, like, you know, they're expecting it to suppress the voting in some way or another. Now, Matthew said it was going to come on Tuesday, but it actually came on Monday, you know. And so this is, I don't know, to me it's very insightful as to, you know, the amount of coordination that goes on with the media. And that's, you know, this is one of the reasons why I started the anti-media to begin with, is because I realized that this kind of stuff was going on. I mean, you don't get the evidence of it very often, but this is one huge chunk of it. This is him coming out a week beforehand and saying, hey, there's going to be a coordinated effort through the media, whether it's MSNBC or other outlets, to go ahead and crown Hillary Clinton the queen of the Democratic Party, even though she has not secured the amount of pledged delegates that are needed to, you know, secure the nomination. So, I mean, this to me was just huge, and I'm surprised it didn't cause more waves. Claire, what do you make of this clip? Were you able to hear it?
I couldn't hear it, but, you know, he's basically just, like you said, I mean, he's laying out the plan, that there is going to be a plan, and they are going to make an announcement. You know, I mean, you can see he says that, you know, over a week ago, and then you have all the evidence come out that the AP was indeed planning this. So, I mean, of course they're all colluding in this together. I mean, it's so obvious. It's obvious by how they paired each other, and it's obvious by, you know, when it plays out. And they weren't very careful about it either. Like, this was easy to kind of, you know, pick apart.
And in the article that you posted today, or that you wrote, there was an email that came out from the AP that was sent to some random or unknown congressman's office, and it kind of shed some light on the coordination that's going on there. And then you got to wonder about the timing. I mean, everybody was worried, you know, the Democratic Party was worried that Bernie Sanders was going to have a big showing in California, and that it was going to give him the momentum that was needed to carry on his you know, chaotic campaign all the way to the Democratic convention, and that it would give him kind of the, you know, the argument to make with the superdelegates about why they should support him and stuff. So you gotta definitely wonder whether or not the AP was, you know, set the time of this, you know, crowning the day before these big elections politically. Right, and in my opinion, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I know there's plenty of people that will say, no, it was just, you know, it just happened to be that day, and they just happened to do it at that time. But, I mean, come on, let's be real. Are they really going to do that and say, hey, you know, she already has it wrapped up, no point in voting, the day before the single biggest state votes in the entire country? I mean, I really doubt that it wasn't politically motivated.
Of course it was. I mean, who is it? The DNC communications director actually said, like, a while back, yeah, he said in late April, any night that you have a primary caucus and the media lumps the superdelegates in, that they basically polled by calling them up and saying, who are you supporting? They don't vote until the convention, and so they shouldn't be included in any count. So what he's saying is that people purposely tilt poll results right before a primary in, you know, to lump in the superdelegates to make Hillary look better. And so when they kept doing that over and over again and people started calling them out, then you have to have this kind of press coup thing. So he admits that right before a primary, when there's something that really tilts the poll, it's planned.
And, you know, these superdelegates, you know, Clinton basically started off like 600 delegates ahead of anybody in the race. And the mainstream media again, being led by the AP, because the AP has been counting these superdelegates from the beginning. Literally, before the first state even cast a vote, Hillary already had a 600-delegate advantage, according to the AP and to every other news outlet. I mean, it's really, really telling when it comes to the state of U.S. democracy and stuff. And I reposted my old article from a while back about the rigged elections and stuff. And, I mean, that article is still, right now, it's getting huge amounts of readership, and people are, you know, still reading and sharing this article, even though it's like a couple months old. But it was about how rigged these elections really are, and how the parties basically choose their candidates, and that the primary system or the caucus system, it's pretty much, it's all for show. It doesn't really, you know, it's not, you're not actually casting your vote to pick the person you want to run for president. You're casting your vote so that the party can placate you and pretend that you actually have a voice, so that you don't riot at the Democratic convention like they did in the 60s. But unfortunately, I think that moment, or I don't know, maybe fortunately, that moment is now coming back and history is repeating itself. And I would be very surprised if there weren't riots at the Democratic and maybe even the Republican national conventions this year.
The thing is about primary season, too, is if you think about it, it's really a chance to kind of throw propaganda out there and sway public opinion towards whatever candidate they wanted in the first place. I mean, this is all, it's like propaganda season. It's all theater, but it's the vote doesn't matter, but the public opinion does. Because once they align behind, you know, the appropriate quote-unquote candidate, then they will follow, you know, they'll follow them all the way to the White House and they'll get them in office. I mean, it's just about steering the people is really what the season is.
Exactly. And if you were listening or paying attention to the 2012 presidential Republican primaries, you would be able to take from that it was exactly like you're saying, Claire. It was literally the entire 2012 Republican primary was about demonizing Iran. Like every single debate was like every guy was arguing over who could bomb Iran first and who could bomb them harder and who would use nuclear weapons against Iran and who wouldn't. And then you had the lone dissenter and Ron Paul that was out there saying like maybe we shouldn't be bombing all these countries and stuff, and everyone wrote him off as some lunatic isolationist. But yeah, you're right. I mean, these primaries are—it's perfect for putting ideas out there, and regardless of who walks away with the nomination, I mean, it's pretty evident that Hillary Clinton was favored from the beginning. I mean, they gave her the 600 delegate lead from day one, thanks to the AP. And you know, the AP—it's allowed to wash its hands of all the controversy that maybe Fox News or MSNBC kind of gets caught up in, because they're the ones that inject like the overt opinion. But the AP, it injects its opinion and establishes narratives not by being like overtly opinionated. It's by picking and choosing what they want to cover and the timing of when they want to cover it. I mean, this example with them anointing Hillary Clinton on Monday is perfect. I mean, it shows they're completely biased. Because they chose that time and they chose to count the superdelegates, but they wrote the report as if, you know, hey, we're just bystanders here. We're just reporting the news. It has nothing to do with our politics or who we want to be elected or any of that. We'll leave Fox News and MSNBC, we'll leave that to them, and they can shove the opinion down your throat. We're just telling you the facts. And the facts are that Hillary Clinton won and that she's going to be the Democratic nominee, even though she didn't. You know, and so the AP is really the most dangerous news outlet or news organization in the United States, and people just don't really know what the AP is. I think people have like a backhanded understanding of the Associated Press. I like they're, you know, anyone that took journalism in school or even many times in English knows about like, you know, AP standard and, you know, AP citations and this, that, and the other. But the AP truly is the quote-unquote unbiased propaganda arm of the U.S. Empire and NATO, I guess you could say. So, you know, I just want everyone out there listening tonight to know. You got to know what, you know, the stuff that comes from the AP. You can look at the footer of the article, and most of it will say you know, reporting by the AP, or it'll be directly a lot of these news outlets like Yahoo and, you know, a lot of them, New York Times, almost every news outlet, in fact, will literally word for word just copy AP articles, because it's like this press association for the mainstream media where they pay like a membership fee, and like the AP produces articles, and then every other news outlet is allowed to syndicate the article. And then, you know, if it's Fox News, they're allowed to like inject their own spin on it. And if it's MSNBC, they can inject their own spin on the article. You know, and so the AP is really the big time, you know, heavy mover in the media business that nobody really knows about. So yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. Anyway, moving on. I mean, I don't know. People are really pissed off about the decision. People are mad that Bernie Sanders lost. Our top article of the day was from Jake Anderson. I was hoping he'd be joining us tonight, but he's not. But great article on the anti-media, an opinion piece by Jake about how the Bernie Sanders revolution actually would have been done a disservice if he were to actually become elected, because he would suffer the same fate as Obama. And, you know, anybody that was around and, you know, watching the 2008 election can recall that Obama had a very similar movement to what Sanders has kind of inspired. But the moment Obama got elected, that movement went away and it disappeared, and Obama became, you know, Bush light, and nobody gave any shit for it. You know, and if you remember back during the later Bush years, everybody was up in arms against Bush. I mean, nobody, you know, anybody on the left, even in the middle, was like, yeah, Bush sucks. He got us into Iraq. I mean, it seems like he might have been lying about that. Now, of course, later on, we find out, yes, he was lying about that stuff. And really, Obama was elected as like the opposite of Bush. And it's kind of telling that, you know, Sanders has been so successful, even though Obama is the sitting president, because, you know, whether a lot of the people that are supporting Sanders or not want to admit it, I mean, you know, Obama has been a big disappointment in many ways for like progressives and stuff like that. And that's exactly why, you know, Sanders is getting the kind of, you know, traction that he is getting, and why, you know, Hillary Clinton is having a problem breaking through. But, you know, I come from the same opinion that Jake is putting out here in the article, and if anybody wants to read it, it's called There's One Way Bernie Sanders Can Still Win, But It's Not How You're Thinking. And it basically makes the argument that it's better that Sanders loses, especially in a way that's been controversial here, with the questionable tactics on the elections and, you know, the coin flips, the superdelegates. Everybody's kind of pissed off about the whole process. But at least with Sanders losing, his movement will not be placated like Obama's movement was, where it'll just die out. And, you know, Obama was elected as like this anti-war candidate. And then Obama went and started like a bunch of new wars. In fact, he started more wars than Bush ever could have dreamed of. And nobody ever, from the left, no one ever gave Obama any shit. I mean, there was a small anti-war movement on the lead up to this thing, you know, trying to topple the Syrian government, but there were, wasn't just the protesters that stopped it. I mean, there were bigger geopolitical things at play there with, you know, with Russia not allowing them to do it. Because keep in mind, when Obama decided that he was going to topple Gaddafi in 2011 with encouragement from Hillary Clinton, there was nobody to oppose him. There was no allies for Libya. Nobody gave a shit about Libya. Nobody gave a shit about Gaddafi. No one cared if he died or if his government was overthrown or if his country fell into utter chaos. And, you know, the U.S. and NATO went in there unopposed, led by France and the U.K. and the United States. We went in unopposed to Libya, started bombing the crap out of the country, and eventually helped capture and kill Gaddafi. And now that country has fallen into utter chaos and is in the midst of some kind of, I don't know if you can call it a civil war. There's like dozens of factions there fighting out. That country is probably going to be unstable for the next couple of decades, if they're lucky. And, you know, there was no opposition there. In Syria, there was an opposition. But there's no domestic opposition really now to these huge foreign policy blunders that are going on, because it's Obama. And the anti-war movement historically has been from the left. When you have a left-wing president in office, well, the anti-war movement goes away. If it was Bush that was doing Libya, I mean, it would have been opposed. And now with Trump, you know, likely coming into office, I really don't see how Clinton can beat Trump. Trump is getting way more voters out. You know, Trump has set a record for Republican primary votes. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton has gotten way less votes than she got even in 2008. You know, so that's pretty telling. You know, there's a good chance Trump will be president, and at least he'll be opposed. If Clinton is president and she does all these things, where's the opposition going to come from? You know, and that's the same kind of stuff that we're dealing with Sanders. We can't speculate too far what Sanders would and wouldn't do, but. You know, Obama made a lot of promises as well, and Sanders made a lot of promises and stuff, and it's just not very likely that you'd be able to follow through on them, and even if you wanted to. And one of the quotes from Jake's article here, but at some point during that first year of the presidency, Obama was told what he had probably always suspected. The president is just a director of operations for the deep state. The president sings the national anthem at the baseball game. And if he doesn't, he goes the way of JFK. You know, I don't want to go too deep down the rabbit hole here, but, you know, presidents are pretty much just figureheads. And honestly, if I was a Sanders supporter, if I was part of the Sanders movement, and I know what I know, I wouldn't be that mad that Sanders didn't win. I'd be mad that, you know, the process screwed him and stuff, but Sanders would be tainted by the presidency. He would lose his, you know, anti-establishment kind of legacy, and his movement would disappear just like Obama's movement did. And one of the ways Jake described it is that anti-establishment sentiment is like a wave. And it crashes onto Washington, D.C. once in a while, and then it recedes back into the ocean. And that's how Obama got elected. He was elected an anti-establishment president, anti-war, anti-Wall Street. The moment he got elected and he took office, he bailed out Wall Street and he started a bunch of wars. You know, and so I think it's better that Sanders loses, because then he can preserve his movement and keep it principled and try to fight and organize from the outside. Because, you know, Claire, I'm sure you can chime in on this. You don't change the system from the inside. You just don't. The system changes you. If you join it and you go in and you think you're going to do something, which I there's plenty of theories about Obama, but I truly genuinely think that he had good intentions when he went in there. And he found out what the real deal was, and then he shut his mouth and he did what they told him pretty much. But you don't really change the system from the inside. I can't really think of many cases throughout history where the system has been changed for the better from the inside. Normally it gets worse. People go in there.
Not at the national level. I mean, you can't. It's impossible. Maybe at the local level, like in local government, city government, I think maybe that's still possible. But when you're talking about on a national scale, this system is so thoroughly corrupted with money and power plays and everything else, there is, I just don't see it changing from the inside at all.
Yeah, and, you know, who knows if working from the outside is going to help affect things, but I think it's, you got a better chance at it. You know, and that's what this article is about. It's an 8-page article. We can't go through the whole thing tonight. If you're a Sanders supporter, and I know there's plenty of them out there that follow us on the anti-media, I really suggest reading it. I wouldn't be too discouraged about Sanders losing, even though it was in many ways stolen. I think it'll be better for the movement and better for his followers and his ideas to at least have more influence will be from outside of the federal government system. And, you know, I was a product of the Ron Paul years, 2012, and that's when I found out all this stuff, and that's when I found out the elections were rigged and the media was slanted and that it was all, you know, controlled, and that they picked Mitt Romney to run against Obama, most likely to lose on purpose. You know, I found all that stuff in 2012, and that's why this time around I sat out the voting system, even though we've been, you know, constantly criticizing it and bringing to light all the cracks in the system in hopes of more people finding out about what's going on so that they can stop participating in it and start trying to fix it. You know, I went through all this stuff 4 years ago, and it broke my, you know, broke my heart, and I couldn't believe it, and I couldn't believe how crooked and corrupt and just how awful the system was to manipulate people in the way that they do and to spread propaganda and all that stuff. But you know what? Like, I've been fighting at it now since then for 4 years. And, you know, I've had my successes here and there. We obviously started the anti-media. We were the main organizers behind the opposition to the 2013 No War with Syria movement. We helped kickstart the initial march against Monsanto. I mean, so, you know, we've had our successes and stuff. And all of it started out by us realizing, oh, shit, in 2012, we realized something ain't right. So thinking about that, I mean, Ron Paul's movement was micro compared to Bernie Sanders. Ron Paul had nothing, no support comparatively. At one point, I think he got up to like 11%. And at one point in Iowa, just because, you know, Iowa was the first state to vote, I think he got up to like 19%. And that was in one state. You know, he never got over 10%, 11% nationally. I mean, Bernie Sanders has had millions, tens of millions of people vote for him already. His movement is huge, and it's passionate, and they're going to be very pissed off after, you know, what's gone on. And I think that those are the people, the Bernie Sanders movement, they're going to be very, very pissed off after this election. I really don't see them voting for Hillary Clinton. I can definitely see a lot of them voting for Jill Stein and for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian and the Green Party. I really don't see them voting for Hillary Clinton. But I think those people are going to cause a big stir. They're going to shake things up much more than what happened with Ron Paul. And, of course, under a different direction, a different agenda than Ron Paul had and stuff. But it's going to be a shakeup nonetheless. And I think that is going to be the single most important thing that comes out of this election, because we all know that these presidents aren't going to change shit. Hillary Clinton is going to continue what Bush has been doing, Obama. Hillary Clinton is going to continue what Obama's been doing. Trump is going to continue what Bush and Obama have been doing. I mean, these guys aren't going to do a damn thing that they're promising. They're just going to continue the status quo, and that's really all they can do. Even if they wanted to change it, they're going to continue the status quo. And that's why it's more important to inspire movements outside of the system to chip away at it and undermine the system at every chance we can get, because it gives the system less authority, it gives them less legitimacy, and therefore it gives them less credibility and less of a mandate to tell us what to do. And that's what we need the most. What we need the most is for federal bureaucrats and these oligarchy and these banksters and these corporatists, whatever you want to call them, what we need is to undermine their authority every chance we get and to give them less of a mandate to tell us what the hell to do with our lives. That's the bigger goal here. It's not about winning elections or any of that stuff. It's undermining the oligarchy. And really, I can't think of a better way to do it than to piss off, you know, tens of millions of Bernie Sanders supporters who are going to go out and rebel against the system after this election is over. So, I don't know. Maybe this is, you know, as crazy as this election has been, unpredictable, hateful, and just crazy, I think some good is going to come of it. And I feel that there's been a turning point in the last couple of days. And Claire, you and me talked about this a little bit. And things, I think, are going to get, I don't know, there's a chance they get a lot worse, but I think there's a really good chance that they get a lot better in the coming years. What do you think?
I think there is a chance of that. We're at a turning point, that's for sure. This is a pivotal moment. So, I mean, I guess it remains to be seen. I think that things could really change for the better, because I think all of the disenfranchisement and anger and all of the kind of hatred and just general vitriol that's been spewed on both sides of, you know, or on every side of this election, people are going to be really upset when their candidate doesn't get in, whoever it is. And there will be a lot of people wanting to do something different, because everybody realizes now how rigged everything is and that they can't change it this way. So I think it's possible that things could get better.
Yeah, and, you know, how do I describe this? The positioning is already being witnessed with the media's favoring of Hillary Clinton over Trump, for sure. I mean, Trump can't wipe his ass without being attacked by the media, and I'm not saying they're wrong by any means. Trump is an awful has a bunch of awful ideas. He says a bunch of awful things, and he should be attacked. But Hillary Clinton is kind of, it's hands off. You know, I mean, the extreme right-wing media, and then the extreme left-wing media, and then the truly independent anti-establishment media, they attack her because of her record, because of her lying, because of her foreign policy, because of all of the horrible things that she's done, whether it's suppressing the victims of Bill Clinton, sexual assaults, and all that stuff. She gets attacked by people, but it's kind of the people on the fringe, like us, that are doing the attacking. I mean, the AP is hands-off with Hillary Clinton. And like I said, the AP establishes the narrative for the rest of the media. I mean, even Fox News is relatively hands-off of Hillary Clinton. If they do attack her, they go after her superficially. And with Benghazi, and they don't even go after the real issues with Benghazi. They go after the superficial stuff. Fox News doesn't go after Hillary Clinton on anything of substance. And so you could already see that the media takes a hands-off approach with Hillary Clinton. And even worse, Claire, I sent you that clip from CNN from last night where she was giving a speech, and they literally used like an effect on the video where it made her like deified. It made her look like she was glowing and that she was like some kind of god with her hands out to the side and like Jesus or something. Like Jesus was returning. And CNN made Hillary Clinton look like Jesus last night. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's actually disgustingly comical, you know? At moments when she had her arms outstretched and she looks like she has this kind of expression of awe on her face, and then, like, she's just glowing. I mean, it's just, oh, God.
I'm surprised they didn't, like,
much more blatant.
I'm surprised they didn't, like, Photoshop a halo over her head or something. That would have been on the cake.
Yeah, it would have been fitting.
You know, and so Donald Trump, he's basically stolen the Republican nomination with vitriol and with, demagoguery, literally. I mean, he took, honestly, what I think he did, because you got to remember, Trump flirted with the running for president back in 2012 as well. And what he did was he faked that he was going to race in 2012, and literally back then, his platform, I don't know if you guys remember, his platform was birtherism. Like, he was his political platform in 2012 was, hey, I don't believe that Obama is actually an American. Let me see his birth certificate. And he was getting all kinds of people like, yeah, Trump, Trump, Trump. It's like, wait, I thought running for politics was about, like, making, you know, a platform and having, like, actual policies and stuff. His policy in 2012 was, I don't believe that Obama is an American citizen. And people kind of latched onto it. And I think what Trump did was he took polling. He had internal polling, and he found out what was really giving the conservative white Republican base anxiety. And he found out that, well, it's Muslims, and many of his supporters, according to recent studies, believe that Obama is a Muslim. And it's Mexicans, and it's race relations and stuff like that. And so Trump had that internal polling, and he knew what was, you know, scaring, conservative white people. And all his campaign has been so far is just tapping into those fears. You know, I'm going to build a wall. I'm going to ban Muslims. All Mexicans are this, and all Mexicans are that. And Mexican judges can't preside over white people cases, and this, that, and the other. I mean, he has literally just taken these unfounded fears that are inside of white conservatives, and he's built a campaign around it, even though he doesn't really have any policies of substance. It's working. And I don't think that Trump – and the evidence is there. I mean, the neoconservatives in the Republican Party are literally trying to find a third-party candidate to get behind. And who knows, they may end up getting behind Gary Johnson. I don't know. But it's not because they would want Gary Johnson to win. It's because they want Trump to lose. And these neoconservatives, and you can also see it in the media and their treatment of Clinton, they would prefer Clinton over Trump. And the media prefers Clinton over Trump. Everybody that has any kind of real influence in the United States prefers Clinton over Trump, because I don't think Trump was supposed to be the nominee, but he stole it, like I said, with this just crazy rhetoric that actually worked. But, you know, all of the forces are going to be out there aligning against Trump. And I don't many people take that as a cue to say, oh, well, then Trump must be the guy that we should elect because everyone hates. No, Trump isn't the guy we should elect, neither is Hillary. But yeah, the truth is, yeah, the establishment figures, the establishment media is going to align behind Hillary Clinton because they prefer her over Trump because she is a lot easier to control. There's a lot of manipulation that can be done. She's got a lot of dirt. I mean, the FBI investigation, at any moment, Obama could just lift the protection that he's been giving her and unleash the Justice Department on Hillary Clinton, and she'd be finished. You know, and with all that leverage, she makes a perfect candidate at this point because then they could really pin her down and make her do whatever the hell she wants. And it's not like she wouldn't, it's not like she'd be doing stuff they didn't want her to do anyway. I mean, she's been a part of this machine for so long. She already works well within it and, in fact, is, you know, a major player in making sure the machine gets done its agenda. You know, and so that's how it's probably going to be playing out here now that Trump and Clinton are the de facto nominees. And a lot of people are, you know, rightly upset because Trump is the most polarizing figure in U.S. politics in recent memory, and Clinton is equally polarizing, but also just vile and unlikable. And truth be told, she's a criminal. Whether we look at her foreign policy or just the crap with the emails and all that stuff. The email, breaking the rules of the emails isn't a big deal. It's the stuff that's in the emails that is a bigger deal, and that's where the true crimes come out, and the genocide and the coup in Honduras. And, you know, she broke a lot of laws in that respect that have nothing to do with private servers and all that stuff. It was the international laws and supporting military regimes and genocide in Libya and things like that. Those are the crimes that should be talked about on Fox News, but Fox News won't talk about that because Fox News supports military coups. Fox News supports genocide in Libya. Fox News supports killing Gaddafi. Fox News supports overthrowing the government of Syria. You know, and they're not going to talk about that stuff. They're going to talk about the emails and the superficial and Benghazi and Stanley, whatever. Anyway, moving on. Sorry, that was long-winded. Claire, you've got a great article up on the anti-media. It's the last story of the day. 5 Ways George Orwell's 1984 Has Come True Since It Was Published 67 Years Ago. Today is actually the anniversary, the 67th anniversary of 1984, and I think a lot of people have read that book. Very, very controversial book that talks about police state, talks about just a complete dystopian future that George Orwell was warning about in the 50s. I know there's different theories about why he named it 1984. Let's just speculate that he thought this could be a possible reality by 1984. Now, fortunately for people back then, it wasn't so true, but unfortunately for people now, 1984 is becoming very, very realistic, and the joke goes around all the time now about how 1984 was supposed to be a warning, not a instruction manual. Unfortunately, the United States government and governments around the world, in particular Britain, have used 1984 as a blueprint on how to control their population. Claire, can you tell us a little bit about this article?
Well, I really am into 1984. I like dystopic fiction and such. So I took just one aspect because if you go through the book, because I'm rereading it now, and when you go through, there are so many examples that could easily parallel, you know, what's actually come to pass now. But I took Newspeak, which is like the political language of the ruling party, and I pulled some parallels, like moderate rebels. The U.S. government likes to say that they're supporting moderate rebels and arming and training moderate rebels, and they get away with doing that, and what they're really doing is arming and training terrorists. And it's if you said, hey, we want to arm and train some terrorists, most Americans would say, no way. So all they have to do is rebrand them as moderate rebels, and suddenly, you know, support is fairly easy to come by. And I took a couple of different examples, like war on terror. I think one of my favorites is no boots on the ground, because it literally does not mean that there won't be boots on the ground. Almost every time they say there won't be boots on the ground, that means that there will be boots on the ground. We've seen it in Syria and...
Yeah, they said it like over 16 times. Obama and other people in his administration said, no boots on the ground, 16 times, and then they said it, and then they did it.
That was just on Syria. They've done it repeatedly with like Iraq and stuff like that, and you know, there's people on the ground in Iraq now too, of course.
Iraq, Yemen now is the most recent one. This is Yemen is one that Bush didn't start. Obama did that, and he's been backing the Saudis in their genocide of Yemen. Just on a quick side note, Saudi Arabia was taken off the UN blacklist of child murderers, even though they're Saudi Arabia and the U.S. backed Saudi coalition in Yemen, which they're pretty much indiscriminately bombing the crap out of Yemen, including hospitals and education facilities and stuff like that. The UN put them on a blacklist because it's estimated that Saudi Arabia is responsible for 60% of the dead children in Yemen since the conflict started. And then they decided, oh, you know what, maybe Saudi Arabia is not that bad. I mean, yeah, they only killed 60% of the children, but they didn't kill 100%, so let's go ahead and take them off that list. It's not that bad. Anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, I want to point something out there on that, too, because it wasn't just Saudi Arabia. It was like the Saudi Arabian coalition. So really what happened there is that the coalition, which is U.S.-backed, was suddenly pulled off the blacklist. And everybody's pointing to Saudi Arabia as having so much power, but I would think that it's actually the U.S. being behind that coalition that pulled the power strings there.
Yeah, because the U.S. and also Britain is involved in that U.S.-backed coalition, and the U.S. now has boots on the ground, and the British have admitted to having advisors in like the control rooms where they carry out the airstrikes and stuff. So yeah, that's a good point. That's the first example you give is the moderate rebels. And, you know, ISIS started out as moderate rebels. You know, these are the guys that we were building up in Syria before the, pretty much before that civil war really started. The U.S. with, you know, under the cover of Saudi, you know, the Saudis taking the major visible role, the U.S., according to like internal documents from the DIA, which is like the Defense Intelligence Agency, somebody got a hold of those documents. I think it was Judicial Watch, that showed that the U.S. was actually supporting a Salafist principality over there in Syria in the hopes of toppling the Syrian government. And this was before the civil war popped off. Now, of course, you remember Obama and Kerry and Hillary Clinton. They told us that we were going to go over there and spread democracy and stuff. But the truth of the matter was that we were, for a long time, engineering a civil war over there to get rid of Bashar al-Assad because we wanted to build a pipeline and for other reasons as well, of course, in Syria, and it was just geostrategically convenient for us to get rid of his government, so we had to start a civil war there and pretend that we were going to go protect their people from the bad guy, but it turns out we were actually the bad guy. And so, you know, the U.S. supported that stuff the whole time, and the moderate rebels, you know, ISIS used to be considered moderate rebels, and then they got out of control, you know.
Yeah, and then consider this, too, though, because you have... Also, our, like, past sworn enemy, Al-Qaeda, we're now supporting, too, like, you know, kind of underhandedly, to fight ISIS that we created. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
It's it leads us right into the next point that you make here, which is kind of from 1984, which was the perpetual warfare. And you use the example of the war on terror.
Yeah, I mean, this is why everybody, like, practically every nation on Earth views the U.S. as, like, a mortal enemy. I mean, we keep aggressively going into countries and somehow try to, you know, we sell that to the people as, like, we're defending ourselves and it's, you know, we're invading other countries and we're killing civilians or we're backing coalitions that kill civilians, like, indiscriminately. And that's why it's really not a war on terror, it's a war of terror. And we are the terrorists to many, many, many people in the world. And I don't think that the U.S. populace really has any idea.
Just think about it. If instead of the U.S. as a whole was doing this kind of thing, that it was you as an individual, right? And, you know, let's say that there was, you had a neighbor that was, you know, not the most stable person and that had, you know, said some bad things to you. And you felt that maybe one day that neighbor could get drunk and, you know, who knows, maybe he might do something not nice to you. And that you decided that you were going to go into his house and you're going to kill him and his family and his friends because there was a chance that one day they could do something bad to you. I mean, what would be the result? You would wind up in prison. You would go to jail and, I don't know, you may be sentenced to death for doing it. The United States does that under the guise of the war on terror. I mean, if you look at Gaddafi, he was no threat to the United States. If you look at Saddam Hussein, he was no threat to the United States. And even if he was a threat to the United States, he hadn't done anything to us. I mean, we invaded their territory before and fought them and stuff, but Saddam Hussein never came to the United States and invaded our country or anything like that. You know, and so the war on terror is kind of a perpetual offensive state of war that the United States has gotten itself into now, and you know, purposely, and it allows these military contractors to make a lot of money. But one of the other things that really draws a comparison to me for 1984, because I remember in the book when they talk about, well, you know, what's the point of having like perpetual warfare? Like, how does that help the oligarchy maintain control over people? And if I remember correctly, it was to drain them of the resources, right? It was to just keep them, you know, keep them paying into this perpetual warfare so that they never had extra money or extra time to you know, do anything else besides just work to pay into this war.
Right. Like, keep them just well enough that they have to, like, hold on and survive. You can't totally knock out their entire foundation, because then they're going to be so angry and so without anything at all that they'll actually stage a revolt. So you keep them busy with work and desperate for money, so they're always, always busy, and all they can do is complain, and they don't have time to do anything else about it.
Yeah, and then you bankrupt their finances by having them pay for a perpetual war that is not, you know, and this is another parallel to 1984. The war didn't really have the intention of winning, and you can't really win the war on terror. I saw this satirical article the other day by the Mideast Beast, which is this kind of funny, you know, satire website that talks about foreign policy in the Middle East. And, like, they have this article up saying, like, oh, airstrike takes out the last terrorist, war on terror over. It's like, it's funny because you're never going to win the war on terror, because terrorism is a tactic. It's not a person. It's not an army. It's not anybody. The war on terror is literally, by definition, perpetual. You're literally fighting an idea.
It's a concept. I mean, I keep saying it's a war. We have declared war on a concept. I mean, how much more of a blank check do you need to go to war with any person, thing, group, individual, nation on the planet forever? I mean, like you're saying, they're never going to kill the last terrorist, because it's not only, you know, terrorists abroad, it's also terrorism at home, and it's, I mean, it's just so incredibly absurd.
And, you know, the U.S. has been at war with ideas since the 50s. I mean, ever since World War II, it was communism. It's like, we got to fight and perpetually fight this idea of communism, no matter where it pops up and sprouts up, whether it's in South America, whether it's in Central America, Asia, you know, all around the world. If there's communism, we got to go fight it and start wars with it. And then now, all of a sudden, it's like, well, I guess communism ain't so bad no more. Because we do all this business with China and stuff, even though we still have Venezuela and Cuba, who we have embargoes on, that kind of thing. But, you know, they literally, after the fall of the Soviet Union, people were like, okay, we're done. We're not going to fight against communism anymore. The threat is over. And the U.S. sat idle for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden 9/11 happened, and they're like, okay, we got a new enemy. We're going to fight against terrorism. That's our next perpetual enemy. Moving on here, I'm not going to be able to take the call tonight, unfortunately. I got a caller coming in, but I'm not going to be able to take it. We got too much more ground to cover. We covered no boots on the ground. We covered the rebels. Oh, man. So we kind of touched on these two topics already, so we can go through them quickly. Your fourth point here, on the five ways that we've become like 1984, the elections. And we've already talked about this a little bit, but tell us a little more from the article.
It's really simple. Just look at the fraud, look at the like coordination with the media, look at how everything has been slanted. I mean, if you take a step back and look at the elections as theater and really look with a critical eye, you will see that this nobody is electing anybody. They have already been selected, and we're just kind of supposed to follow along in the corral and pick who it is that they have already chosen.
Well, that was pretty simple. We've already covered this stuff all day today, first half of the show.
Yeah.
anybody that's just tuning in, we got a bunch of new listeners right now. You can catch our recording on YouTube. Go on YouTube, search UCY TV. The whole entire episode will be up in about 30 minutes, and then you can listen into it tomorrow or later tonight, whatever. The fifth point you make is the news, and we touched on this with the AP a little bit as well, but tell us a little more about this.
Well, the media is inextricably tied to corporations. I mean, obviously, everybody knows there are six corporations that own, like, over 90% of media outlets in the country, and that includes, like, radio and cable and, you know, TV, everything. And
including the magazines, the newspapers.
Yeah, print, you know, all print material. 90%, six corporations. That's to tell you a little bit about how little choice we have and how, like, irrelevant what the information is that we get. I mean, we're hearing what it is that the corporate narrative, you know, backed by the government wants us to hear. So that's why independent media is so incredibly important because, you know, news means something totally different in the mainstream and it just equates to propaganda.
And, you know, this one is really important because I think the guy's name was Winston, right? The main character in 1984. Mm-hmm. So Winston's job, actually, in the book was to go back and, like, delete, like, news clippings and change news and stuff. And, you know, the same thing is happening nowadays when stuff gets censored, you know, when they do release information, it's redacted. And then, you know, recently after a lot of the police brutality stuff started coming to light, especially with, like, Eric Garner and stuff like that, you know, the some people caught the NYPD going and re-editing, like, Wikipedia articles and stuff like that. And remember there was that big fuss about how people, there was like congressional staffers that were going in and editing Wikipedia and things like that recently. So, I mean, this stuff is going on. These guys go back and they literally try to change history. They go and replace words, they delete stuff, they change articles, and then they censor stuff or they redact stuff. When the information finally comes out, it's all redacted.
Yeah, this is not, and this is supposed to be the most transparent, you know, administration in history or whatever. It's just, it's crap. I mean, it really is. It's just a lie.
It's too bad that the United States hasn't been living up to its supposed principles. I'm actually working on an article. It should be out by, like, Friday. Because, you know, I'm really upset about what happened to me over the past week. In my travels, I went to go visit my friend in Arizona. And I was harassed pretty badly by the DHS and the Border Patrol on my travels. And, you know, I'm traveling peacefully and I'm traveling without any quote unquote illegal substances.
And within the United States too.
Yeah, within the United States, I wasn't crossing any borders or anything like that. And I was harassed and I was taken out of my car. My vehicle was searched by the DHS. They put a dog in my car. To try to find anything I was hiding, and that was bad enough on my way to Arizona, and I made a post about it, and a lot of people were telling me to, you know, asking me to write about it, and, you know, I was like, you know what, this kind of crap happens all the time, I'm not going to be able to write anything new, and then I stayed in Arizona for a couple of days with my friend, I went to come back to California, and it happened again, they did it to me again at the checkpoint on the freeway. And, you know, it really pissed me off. So I'm writing, I'm working on this article, and I'm basically going to talk about how every single one of the Ten Commandments, the Bill of Rights, which is, I guess, kind of like the Ten Commandments for the United States. The Bill of Rights is a fraud. It's a fake. Look at that article on Friday. All of our rights are not guaranteed. You gotta be willing to defend them. And so that's what my article is going to be about. Keep an eye out on that. Make sure you join us tomorrow night. Here on the Anti-Media Radio, ucy.tv/TAMR, and the Anti-Media, anti-media.org/radio. And catch our recordings on ACY.TV.
Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.